Sadam, dear listeners, and welcome back to our continuing series on Dharma presented by Professor G. Venkatraman. Last week we presented a question and answer session in this series, and today also we'll be continuing with yet another question and answer session based on Professor's earlier talks in this new series. And the questions will be posed by a panel, and the panelists today are Radio Sai's Bishop Rushti and Sri Aman Javeri, a research scholar from the Department of Management Studies at the Institute. And as always, Professor Venkatraman will be answering and clarifying the questions put up by the panelists. So, over to Professor for his opening remarks and then taking it further. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Sunil. I just want to ask you a question, which is, you ask questions and I give answers. Are you just being polite and saying, that's a great answer? Or do you really feel that I am trying to answer your question? Because I need to have that feedback. I don't know what listeners feel, and I don't get to see many of their mails, or in fact most of their mails. But what is your feeling before I go any further?
Well, sir, you are someone who has...
You don't try to find out what are my... tell me my defects openly. I am ready to accept.
You are someone who has been interacting with students and has been teaching, and you know that for a teacher, the session is very fulfilling only when there is a lot of interaction in the class.
Yes, that I agree.
So, I think it is the same. You giving a talk is one experience, and the session where we get to understand more clearly or question what you have said or get more clarifications about what you have mentioned based on what Guru Charan Das has written and your reflections on it, I think it definitely gives us more clarity, and we are able to approach the thing in a manner in which we can understand more clearly. And I think that is the biggest advantage of an interaction session.
The way I look at it is, there is an audience out there, hopefully. I can't see.
We don't have phone-ins. That would be the ideal thing to do, where we can get questions from listeners.
Well,
hope one day we'll get there.
Hope I'll be ready for that kind of treatment. But my point is, since I can't see an audience and you are the only two guys I can see, if you really understand something of what I say, I can extrapolate and make the claim a certain percentage of the audience at least understand.
Yes.
That's all.
And I think we should also take this opportunity to tell all the listeners that we are only representatives. I mean, yeah. I and Aman are representatives of a question.
See, the
that
only
you
thing is, your representatives who are not elected by a vote. So your reputation is also in danger. If there is a vote, they may say, fire this guy.
No, so we will become a dummy representative. Whatever question you want, we will ask.
You try to be difficult customers. Maybe they will enjoy my discomfort. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, Aman. Aman had two, three questions. Maybe we'll begin with him.
Sir, so the whole, we thought a couple of questions on consciousness, some points you had raised, and also some questions on the...
Did I raise questions on consciousness? No, I'm not conscious
of
that.
Points that you
the points
made.
That you raised. Some questions on...
Remind me what I said.
Yes. And also, sir, the central theme of your talk, which is...
I'm not talking, man. Oh, my recorded talk.
Yes,
okay.
The musing on Draupadi chapter. First musing on Draupadi chapter.
Yes, sir. So, sir, one thing that really emerged from that was, you mentioned about, you compared this cosmic law, and then you also, Guru Charan Das evades talking about God, and he talks about cosmic law, and you also said that yes, there could be something like a cosmic law, and then you linked it to the existence of God.
He uses via the word Gandhi. Cosmic justice.
Cosmic justice.
Via Gandhi.
Yes, sir, via Gandhi. So, sir, the first question to you, which immediately that came to my mind was, has Swami alluded to this cosmic justice and cosmic law? And when Swami talks about it, sir, how does Swami represent that that particular phenomena in his teachings and in his writings?
There are two parts to the question. I'll answer the second part. As far as the second part is concerned, there is a sort of nice narrative Swami has to stress the point God is within. And the story goes like this. Long after this event, the Krishna and Draupadi are together. When Draupadi asked Krishna, why were you so late? And Krishna said, you're at fault. She said, how could I be at fault? There I was in trouble and I was calling out to you, but you didn't show up. you didn't come to my help. He said, listen, think back. You call me Mathuravasi, to make your word true, I had to rush to Mathura. Then you call me Dwarakavasi, I couldn't get a taxi to go from Mathura to Dwaraka, it's a long distance. Finally you call me Hridayavasi, heart is very close to you, so I jumped out and saved you. And the point he was really trying to make this was the students and he could take liberties, is God is the indweller. The second thing point is, if you look at the Mahavakyas, I am the Atman, says one of them. I am Brahman, Aham Brahmasmi. So, technically the Upanishads refer to the cosmic God as Brahman. But the part of the cosmos is inside. And that was given the name Atman.
Yes.
And Atma and Brahman are one and the same. There is no difference. I think there is a Mahavakya relating to that also, but I can't recall it off the cuff.
I am Atma Brahma. That is interesting. In English also it means the same. I am Atma Brahma is Sanskrit.
Okay.
In English it is I am Atma and Brahma.
So, there is a God everywhere. And that's what Gandhi says. There is a mysterious power that pervades everything. Gandhi did not say, it is also within me.
Yes, sir.
But that is implied in the Bhagavad Gita. In fact, Krishna explicitly says that in the 8th chapter right at the beginning.
Yes.
And Swami has stressed it any number of times, I am in you. So, whether you think of him as the cosmic God or as the indweller, he is the all-pervading one. Therefore, there is no need to make any technical distinctions. I will give you an example from science.
Yes.
You may not be aware that the way people study the early cosmos is by going deep into the atom. And the reason is, when you study physics in very small dimensions, for that you have to go inside the atom, you are really looking at the history of the baby universe. There was a time when the universe was that small. It is difficult to go smaller and smaller dimensions because such experiments cannot be done on planet Earth. The kind of energies we need, even a galaxy is not enough. So we look at the cosmos itself in the extreme. That is how astrophysicists and particle physicists come together. So in that sense, even scientists say, the copy of the universe is within us, not just once, but in every single atom. And there are something like 10 to the power of 40 atoms inside us. So the universe is within us in a multiple number of times. That is what a scientist says. Okay? So, why should not the cosmic God be within us? He is the seed from which he came. We are all. Bijam mam sarva bhutanam. He says. So that's DNA must be here also.
Yes, sir.
And we don't realize. That's why he says, I am the spark of the divine I put in you. That's why I call it Divyatma Swarupalara.
Yes,
embodiments of divine Atma.
Yes.
And later on, he probably thought that we didn't understand Atma. He said, Prema Swarupalara. Because Prema is one of the manifestations or characteristics of Atman.
Yes.
And Atman manifests himself. You call God Dayanidhi, Karnanidhi, Kripanidhi, all these nidhis. But he is also Prema. And so he is Purna Prema Swarupa.
Yes, sir.
And he says, you are a reflection on me, is reminding us of that also.
Yes,
I slightly expanded my answer to your question.
Yes, sir. Sir, just one more
thing. Summarizing, there is no difference between cosmic God and God within.
Sir,
it's all part of one thing.
Sir, I'm almost tempted to ask you, sir, now that you have laid down this proposition of the consciousness being all-pervading. Sir, you have, from the starting of these talks, sir has been talking about how Bhagavad Gita and Mahabharata cannot be seen in separation. Sir, can you please share with us what is the corollary of this in the Bhagavad Gita and what is the methodology?
What is the corollary of what?
Means this consciousness pervading everything.
Yes.
We saw the example through Draupadi's case study here, sir.
Yes.
In the Bhagavad Gita, is there a methodology for knowing this? Is there a way, is there a method given by Krishna by which we can know this for sure?
Oh yes, the first four chapters or five chapters, he talks about the path of yoga. How you sort of control your senses and elevate your, purify yourself and elevate yourself to the level of consciousness. But then he begins to set the stage for the ordinary Joe. If you really want to do that, you have to go through Patanjali's mark. So Yama, Niyama and all that stuff, pretty tough. And not in this this super Kali Yuga age. One of the strange omissions in Bhagavad Gita is the smartphone. Somehow Krishna talks about the smartphone.
Now Bhagavad Gita is there on people's smartphone.
He says, it's like Krishna saying, all are in me, but I am not in all, something like that. Very complicated sentence. So, after laying that thing, foundation, he tries to tell Arjuna, actually I am God. And he shows that by transforming his physical self into Vishwarupa. Then Arjuna asks, what is the way to attain you? You say, attain me. He says, there is one path which is tough for the ordinary Joe. I'll give the path for dummies. And the path is bhakti. Even bhakti is too tough for the Kali Yuga. So Swami has sort of say, do service thinking of me, which is a little more practical, because once you talk about bhakti, you can get into technicalities and give excuses to God, saying, no, this is difficult, that is difficult. Forget it, boys. Just think that I am in everything and serve me and make me happy. That's enough. That is the way he has given the message of cosmic God. Because think of me and serve me. Serve all. What does all include? So you have to put a list. Father, mother, matru deva bhata, bhava, pitru deva bhava. What about teachers? Okay. Teachers include, what about guests? Atithi deva bhava. Does it stop there? Not exactly. Because Ishvara sarva bhutanam. Therefore you have to think of everything. So you may say, why do I have to thank sun? What the hell does it do for me? If there is no sunlight, there won't be life on earth. So you have to be grateful to sun. In the Ramayana, Rama is in a sort of a fix in the battle. Agastya comes and teaches him Aditya Hridayam. He doesn't talk of Brahman or thing. You pray to God, the God who sustains you. That's a sort of a reminder for us. So if you go that way, we don't realize how many different ways God helps us. Right here, somebody has placed a jug of water for me to sip. I am taking that sip. Do I realize my body is substantially water and God has made water available so that I can drink? Do I ever thank God for water He gives me? We say Brahmarpanam and all that. Instead of that, just thank God for the water. Because,
yes, sir.
And we read in the newspapers and listen in the radio about atmospheric pollution. Do we shed one tear for that Panchabhuta air? Goswami often asks, do you shed a tear for Dharma? So, we have to understand the omnipresence of God. And that is a bit difficult for us, at least we make it difficult for ourselves. So Swami said, think of everything and pay homage. So he made it very simple. Now I have to connect it with your question, so you have to repeat your questions if you remember it.
I think you asked me
if it is reflected in Bhagavad Gita.
That also, and plus, what is the method of doing it? I think you have answered both those.
Yes, service in the true sense is the method. And the real purpose is, okay, I do that service. How do I find out whether I have done service or not? That also Swami has explained. You have not done any service if your ego meter is not showing less. The ego meter must show, come down to less and less, like price of oil. But price of oil will never go to zero. But ego must go to almost zero, then he will take your hand and save you. The whole purpose of this is to get rid of dehabhimanam or body consciousness. That is what separates you and me. What he says is, you go open the curtain 3/4, I will take care of the rest. I don't ask you to do all of it. I can give you grace marks and take you over to my side.
In fact, as you are mentioning about this ego meter coming down in service, I'm reminded of a conversation that one of the students had with Bhagwan. He was a member of the Hyderabad Sai Youth, and he was very much into many service initiatives that this Hyderabad youth are engaged in. And at some point, Swami asked him, what are you going to do? He was doing his engineering. And he said he would like to be in Hyderabad and continue, you know, working with the Hyderabad Sai Youth. Swami wanted him to join the university here for MBA. Swami actually very clearly told him, you come and join here for MBA. But he said no. He was so much into being part of that service group, he thought he'd be missing doing selfless service if he joins Bhagwan's university. And so Swami asked, okay, what are you doing there? He told, I'm doing selfless service, Swami. Okay, what is selfless service? So he said, Swami, where we go out and serve, you know, we have no expectations and all that. Swami said, that is not selfless service. Who told you that is selfless service? Swami said, that is only less selfish. Mm-hmm. That is not selfless. Selfless service is when you don't think yourself as the doer. When you don't even know that you are doing
it. When you are not conscious of the service you are doing.
Yes. I think that when the ego meter is perhaps touching zero.
Actually, I should call it body consciousness.
Body. Yeah,
you are not aware of that.
You are not
aware. See, Swami makes a clear distinction between ego and body consciousness. Body consciousness is more powerful. Ahamkara. Kara means action. Aham is that feeling, I am doing. What is that I? It's actually your body. Body, that I doesn't exist. You have created itself. Yeah. It's a mythical this. See? In fact, there used to be a saying, which Indulal Shah used to quote, don't talk about the service you have done. Talk about the good that service has done to you. Mm. If it has not done any good to you, then forget about that service. That was the remarkable emphasis that Swami laid on service. And this is very important because recently I came across a manuscript or a paper written by one of the members of the faculty of IIM Bangalore. Actually, I have to read it more carefully. I read the first sentence and second sentence, then I said, no, this is nonsense, I will come back to it later. Because first sentence says, spirituality has nothing to do with service. I got a heart attack. When I recovered from there, I read the second sentence, which I don't remember. He said, I don't have time to read this. Spirituality has nothing to do with service. What about karma yoga, man?
Yes. No, I think many people feel that spirituality is, you know, spending a lot of time trying
to
know
actually
yourself
in meditation. Yeah, actually, it is about discovering yourself and meditation.
Yourself. Yes.
See, this is the way people have cut it to pieces. Yes. Pieces, as Swami used to say.
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, I remember when I was reading the biography of Swami Vivekananda. So after Swamiji returns from the US, you know, he is now setting up the ashrams and, you know, putting the order, the Ramakrishna order in place. And so there is this young monk who comes to Swamiji and says that, Swamiji, I have a serious problem. I told, what happened? He says, I'm doing everything that I can. I close the door, I sit down, I'm in that same position and I'm trying to still the mind and I'm trying to meditate, but it is just not happening.
Arjuna says that.
It's just not happening. And Swami Vivekananda says, I'll tell you what to do. Next time, you just get up, open your eyes, close that mat, step out, open the door and go out and serve the guy who needs some help, who is lying next to the gutter. Go out and help that person who needs some medicines. Go out and help that widow who has no one to look after.
Actually, this kind of conversation I read in one of the complete works of Vivekananda. There he goes much further. Because the disciple asks questions about moksha. He gets angry. That is Vivekananda. You are a very selfish person. You don't want to work and you want moksha, you want others to feed you, what is the use of all your education? Go out in the world, teach people science, mathematics, algebra, geometry, history. Yes. Remove their ignorance. They are sunk in tamas. Pull them to rajas. Let them work hard like they do in America. Let them earn money. Let them enjoy. And then you go and try to remove their rajas. First, let us try to become active like people in America.
Yes.
He says you are a parasite, which reminds me of one discourse of Swami. I don't remember anything else about that discourse. But it was one afternoon. I don't know what the occasion was. Suddenly, Swami started blasting against moksha. Moksha, moksha, moksha. Empty the moksha.
I remember.
You are very selfish. You want moksha for yourself. And all the others are suffering there. What are you doing for them? Nothing. Go out there and serve. Serve till you have lost all your consciousness of you. Then God will come looking for you. Bangaru, Bangaru, where are you? I want to give you moksha, but I cannot see you. I was just electrified by that. Swami demolished this quest for moksha. Exactly as Vivekananda did. So there is clearly a signal from the master.
I think there is also a faculty member in our department who wanted to go to the Himalayas.
Yes, yes, yes.
Isn't it?
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, there's a story that one of our faculty members once told Swami, I want to leave all this and I want to go and do meditation. And then Swami didn't say anything that time. After some time, Swami called him for the interview and asked him, what sadhana you are doing? And he said, Swami, I'm inquiring, who am I, who am I? And then it seems Swami really blasted him and Swami told him, as long as you separate God and work, you will not get what you want even in 1,000 births.
And Swami even went to the extent of saying, I will not
give you. I will ensure that you will not get it in 1,000 births.
I will ensure that you don't get moksha.
See,
if you escape the world.
The point is, then why are people saying, who am I? Swami himself has asked that question. That is a training that must come. I mean, we must get ready for that stage. It's like saying, I want a job, very big job, in an IT company, without having even passed third standard. So he says, first finish your primary school, secondary school, then go through UG, PG, then you can talk about a job. So, when Ramana insists on that question, he's talking to people who are in the Jignasu state.
Yes.
This guy has not got out of Arti Atarti and wants to stick around there and still ask for moksha. That is the point.
Sir, I think this goes back to the point that you have raised again and again about the makeup of gunas that we have, sir.
Yes.
Depending upon the composition of the gunas, maybe the sadhana that is prescribed to each individual will differ, sir.
Obviously, Swami has said that many times, when you take your car out for checking the tire pressures, if the pressure is less, you add extra air. If the pressure is more, you release air. So, the doctor's prescription depend on the patient.
Right.
There is no one size that fits all, which is something that Western people seem to seek always. Westerners have two patients. I want one formula. That kind of formula cannot be given. If you are sick, the doctor will treat you according to the sickness. Two fellows go. Both fellows have stomach problems. First fellow goes in. Doctor, I have a stomach problem. He examines. Don't eat for 2 days. You have been eating too much. Get lost. Next guy goes. Doctor examines. I would like you to get the following test done. I want one CT scan. What is the difference? Doctor suspects cancer in this case.
Yes.
And that fellow, there is nothing wrong with him except he has overindulged. So the prescription will depend upon the person.
Yes.
And if you go through Swami's interviews and all that, he never prescribes the same strategy for everyone. Each patient is in a different state of evolution. And he prescribes what is good for that person and what that person's aptitude is like.
Yes, sir.
So, he's a very careful doctor. And there is no such thing as one formula for all. If there is one formula for all, That is avoid bad company.
Yes, sir.
And put a ceiling on desires. Those are what you call mandatory.
Sir, but this also often leads to some kind of confusion, sir. I have myself been in that state. When you read Swami's literature, at one place Swami says, do Namasmarana. And then at another place Swami would say that, inquire into who am I. Then one place Swami would say,
they are meant for different audiences. You see, one of the difficulties I had with Bhagavad Gita in the early days was, it seemed to be contradictory. At one place he talks about Advaitam kind of thing. Another place he talks about Dvaitam. It took me a long time to realize that Krishna was addressing the whole universe, the whole of humanity, and Arjuna was just a proxy.
Right.
So at different moments he sees Arjuna as you, me, our friend Bhishu, and so on. So he is giving a message for all. Now, when Swami came, he unpacked that highly compressed. It is a highly compressed software.
Yes.
So he decompressed it and gave it in bits and pieces to different people at different times. Even there was a strategy. I have read somewhere that when he went to Rajahmundry and those places in his early days means 60s, 70s or something like that, he would stop in small villages and talk to farmers. And later on, Kasturi was with him. Kasturi later on, Swami, all these are farmers, Rayatulu, Andaru Rayatulu. You are talking of Atma. They won't understand anything. And Swami smiled and said, do you think I don't know that? Well, Swami, if they don't understand, why are you telling them? And Swami smiled and said, Kasturi, I am planting a seed. The fruit will come 10 janmas later. And I always remembered that. Whenever Swami gave this course here, because all the primary school children will be sleeping. See, for Krishna, in the morning, some days, sometimes Swami will give this course, some functions. Then all the primary school children, they would have been woken up at 4 o'clock to get here. They'll be sleeping happily. Swami couldn't bother. I was, worried. What is Swami going to say? Swami is preparing them for some future generation. It is going there like Abhimanyu in the womb and getting encoded.
Yes.
So there were strategies. Yeah, he was a master strategist.
Amazing. I think our discussion has moved into so many lanes and violins.
But there is a message everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yes. In fact, as we are talking of this service, what occurred to me is how a service without sadhana can sometimes totally be fruitless. The service and sadhana...
No, I don't understand what you mean by sadhana.
What I meant is... Like if we do service without completely understanding how it has to be done and with what spirit it has to be done, which will come once you are on the path of sadhana. Otherwise,
no, but then the question arises: what exactly do you imply by the word sadhana?
Here, I just mean that one should have that spirit of inquiry.
No, I'll put it this way: Swami has answered it. That's why I try to.
Yes.
Ego. If you take iron ore, when it is mined, it is first actually a mixture of oxides.
Right.
Mostly it is two ferrous and ferric oxides. But it's also mixed with a lot of mud. The first thing is you have to wash away the mud. Then you have to do further this thing to get the iron out and all that. So, sadhana is purification. Purification means what? Removing the malinyam in the mind.
Right.
Impurities in the mind. There are many ways of doing it. Nobody says this is the one way. Different people adopt different methods. But unless there is purification, the value does not increase. For example, gold ore has a price. Raw gold ore has a price. When it is purified, it has another price. When it is purified to a very high extent, for scientific experiments, we need what is called 4-9 purity, 99.9999. That kind of gold, if you want to produce, that takes a lot of effort. And you buy it from, in those days, there used to be only one company that would supply this, Johnson and Matey in England. So for scientific experiment, when you want very pure material, you approach them. That will be very expensive. So, refinement is an endless process and it ends when you go above the gunas. So the whole name of the game is to get out of the gunas.
Removal
of gunas. You can go this way, you go this way, you go that way.
And service is just one way of removing that.
Provided you do that service not like the gentleman from Hyderabad did, but saying, I am really serving God here. I see God in you. And if I do that, then that service becomes true service. Here I want to tell you a conversation I had with a doctor in New Zealand. His name is Dr. Robin Youngson. And he is a Brit, was educated in Cambridge, but settled down in New Zealand. He's an anesthesiologist. And he has gone into Maori spirituality and all that. And when I talked to him, he said, he has written a book called Compassionate Healthcare or something. It's a very nice book. He says there are three ways of serving, the way in which a doctor can treat a patient. He said, what are they? One is the auto garage mechanic approach. He said, what do you mean by that? What happens if your car is not okay, you take it to a garage and that fellow fixes the problem. So the doctor can fix the problem of the patient. You treat an organ. Okay, what about the second method? You treat a patient. What do you mean by that? I consider that person as a human being and I treat. What about the third one? You serve the patient. I sat up. This man is talking service. Let me hear what he has to say. He said, what do you mean by serving a patient? He said, whom do you serve? He said, you tell me. He said, you serve your master. So you treat your patient as master and deal with the whatever the master has, wants, meet his requirements and serve him that way. And then I said, who is our master? Swami said, your God is your master. So literally, he is seeing God in the patient, in our language. By the way, Mr. Ravi Rudra, who accompanied me, he was the central coordinator for New Zealand, and he requested Dr. Robin Youngson to give a talk on their biannual meeting once in 2 years. And he gave a talk. He got a standing ovation. In other words, I saw clearly there that God resides in all hearts, even if they did not know him by a particular name as Krishna, Satya Sai Baba. And once they respond to that God, they do exactly what Krishna wants us to do, what Swami wants us to do. This man really understood the point that patient is God when he comes to you. Dr. Safaya used to say, in our hospital, patient is God. I hope everybody understood it. But that has to be stressed.
And in fact, recently there was this 14th anniversary celebrations of Bangalore Hospital in Sai Kulwanth Hall. And there, Mrs. Geeta, who is heading along with her husband the counseling department, she mentioned how they were able to help many patients get out of these drugs meant for depression and all this psycho, I don't know what the exact phrase is, but they were able to ensure that all these people are away from all those drugs which are basically of for their mind, for psychology. And the neurologist said that has helped tremendously because those drugs actually ruin your system. They do a lot of damage to the physical body. And just by treating that other patient, not as a patient, but as God, as Bhagwan, so much love they have been able to pour that, you know, people are able to recover fast and be away from all this drugs.
You see, people fall into depression when they get cut off in some manner or the other. That cut off can occur in two ways. One is others shun them. The other is these people shun others thinking they don't like them.
In fact, the case that she mentioned was of a lady whose husband passed away, and after that husband was a taxi driver, and after that the family disowned her. apparently, quote unquote, because of some astrology charts, something they referred and they disowned her. And so she was left high and dry with her son, small, I think some 3-4 year son, and she had to look for a job and all that. So as you rightly mentioned.
So there are these two cases. To put it in brief, what you offer that person is love and companionship. You don't go trying to say you must do this and that. Just start talking nicely. Not about the person and all that. You know, I saw something very interesting. You distract the person. Don't try to say, I'm taking this, now I'm going to cure you of this, and none of that nonsense. You can just say, look, of course, in the beginning it will be very difficult. You have to figure out how to deal with that person. But talk about something that distracts the person. And then slowly make the person realize that person is missing love and you give it to him or her. Don't do it immediately, but they cannot resist love beyond a point. Their defenses you have to break down. Then they will be congenial to you. And once that starts, you can bring it down. And Dr. Sandweiss, whom you all know through his books, had his frequent visits here. I asked him once, you are a psychiatrist. You came to Swami in 73. And you continued to treat patients for many, many years. Now he is sort of retired. He doesn't do that anymore. Did you take Swami's teachings into your work? Did you change your method of dealing with patients? Said, of course I did. What was the thing that you did? I asked him. The methods I learned in college do not talk about love. I tried to give love to the patients. And then they began to pour out their problems. And when I had squeezed out the problems, I replaced that vacuum with love. So there was a man. I may not be quoting him exactly, but essentially, he gave love, which is what Swami used to give to anyone and everyone.
Yes.
And that worked for him much better.
In fact, I remember talking to Dr. Chandrasekhar, who is head of the Department of Cardiac Surgery in Swami's Hospital in Bangalore. And actually I had gone there to do a story of a patient who had traveled from Pakistan.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yes, for treatment in a hospital. So in that context, after he narrated about the patient's condition and how he was treated and all that, incidentally, this patient had come for 6 days, changing 2-3 trains and 2-3 buses, and it was a big journey, and arduous journey, but finally they were all very happy. Then I asked him, you know, the same question, has your approach to medicine and patient care changed after you came to Bhagavan? He did not know anything about Swami until he came here. And he says there is only one interview that he had with Swami in 2008, where Swami asked him, do you need anything for patient care? He said, no. Swami said, see, I have given you the best of equipment. I have given you all the facilities, infrastructure, everything that you need. All I am asking you to do is when a patient comes to you, you please look into the eye of the patient and speak to him with love. Rest I will take care. That's all Swami has told him. And he says, that changed me so much that today, every morning when I go in the ward for patient round, believe me, it is not a patient round. For me, it has become a darshan round.
Yeah. Now I will tell you something. You know, what you said just now brings out one very important truth, which is to go to the root of the problems that humanity is facing today, you don't need cash.
Yes.
First, you must invest with love.
Yes.
That doesn't
yes.
cost, as Swami used to say, one naya paisa.
Yes.
It costs your ego though. So if you are able to set that aside and put yourself in the shoes of the other person and then understanding that problem, treat that problem of the patient, but putting God inside. See, God has come to me in the form of that patient to test me, my methods. Then things will start working. Yes, at some point, money will be involved, for example, with dealing with physical pollution. But physical pollution results because of mental pollution. To deal with mental pollution, you don't need any money.
Correct.
And that is so something true. That people fail to appreciate.
If you go to the root of all the pollution,
yes,
it is mental pollution.
The first thing you have to put down, invest, yes, is this.
Is this.
It's like commitment.
Somehow this is the only thing which everyone evades.
Nobody talks
and
about
they, and
these
they go
things.
To technology to find solutions for world.
No, no, that the reason is they are trying to solve the problems created by the mind with the mind.
Mind, absolutely.
And David Bohm, the physicist, thought as a system or something like that. He's written a book. And he's a very brilliant physicist who has also taken a good look at Vedanta. He says mind is very good at creating problems. When it tries to solve a problem it has created, it will create more problems. That's the nature of the mind. So it is an endless diverging spiral. Forget it. And Einstein put it like this, no problem can be solved at the level of consciousness at which it is created.
Yes.
If the problem is created by the mind, you can bet not in a trillion years. Even the universe may end, but the problem will not be solved. You have to go to a different level. And that is the higher level, and that is the level of the heart. Every problem of the mind can be solved only by going to the level of the heart, and nothing else. There is no doubt about it.
Wow. Amazing. I don't feel like ending this conversation.
But Sunil is looking at you anxiously.
Yeah, I know. Time is
he may out. Forget that you are God.
Just from one question, we have moved into very interesting discussion, and I think this is something which, I think for both of us, it is very, very enriching, and I'm sure it will be the same for all those listeners who are with us now. So dear listeners, please do write to us, and I know there will be so many more questions in your mind. Please feel free to send them to listener@radiosai.org. Actually, in this musing, sir has touched upon many aspects. The aspect also of consciousness, which we have not really come to today. But maybe someday we will have the chance
to
discuss.
I'm glad you are conscious of what I have said.
But hopefully we will get to discuss that.
I think better watch out for Sunil. You are closer to him than I am.
So, thank you very much, dear listeners, and of course to sir for having started this series, which has become, every week we know how much difference it is making to us, and I'm sure you are also liking it. So thank you so much for being through us all throughout this day, this lovely Thursday. Over to Sunil.
Thank you, Pishu. Sai Ram, dear listeners, that brings to an end the 10th question and answer session based on Professor G. Venkatraman's earlier talks in this new series based on Dharma. We hope you like this session, and next week we'll be continuing the present series. So please don't forget to tune in then, and we shall alert you in advance with web and radio announcements about what's coming up in the next week. So watch out this space. We thank you for listening, and as always, the podcast of this program may be accessed via our website www.radiosai.org. And dear listeners, your questions and feedback are valuable to us, and you may write to listener@radiosai.org. And coming up next on Thursday Live is the segment Service Love in Action. So please stay tuned, and thank you, and Jai Sai Ram. Tune in to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Allah Akbar. Allah Akbar. Allah Akbar. Allah. اول اللہ نور پایا قدرت کے سب بندے ایک نور تے سب جگ اپجیا را کون بھلے کو مندے کون بھلے کو رام ہرے ہرے نام